Okay. Thank you. So I'm going to show you the results of the magnetodynamic modeling of the interaction between the southwestern limb of Sentinel-6 and an ambient atomic cloud. This is a work that strongly relies on the interplay between modeling and observations, and multi-wavelength observations. We started by jointly analyzing X-rays and radio H1 observations on Sentinel-6. This allowed us to reveal shock cloud interaction in this remnant, and the analysis left a few open issues that we addressed with our MHD modeling. We followed a forward modeling approach, so we synthesized observables from the models, and we compared the observables synthesized by from the model with the actual observation, ranging from radio up to the S energy band. So this combination of model observations allowed us to have a deeper insight on the physics of the shock cloud interaction and on the particle acceleration occurring in this region. We have already seen a Sentinel-6. It is a very interesting source. It has a bilateral morphology, which shows regions with very efficient particle accelerations that we see in X-rays, we see in gamma rays, we see in radio, obviously. This is the S map that Mariano already showed, and this is the gamma ray spectral energy distribution. You see that this pure leptonic model seems to fit well the S data points and the Fermi latest upper limits, and leaving little, if any, space for hadronic emission. Nevertheless, we know from X-ray data analysis that there are signatures of hadronic acceleration in Sentinel-6. We have found indications for shock modification, for an increase in the shock compression ratio toward the non-thermal limb, and there are indications for magnetic field amplification. So we expect hadronic acceleration to be efficient in this remnant. The problem is that Sentinel-6 is evolving in a very tenuous environment. So the proton-proton collisions are not very frequent. There is a cloud which is interacting with Sentinel-6 here at northwest that is very well studied. It is not that dense, it's about 0.3 particles per cubic centimeter, but it's much denser, a factor of 10 denser than the ambient medium. However, it lies in a region where particle acceleration is not at work. But if we look at south here, we see that the secreton emission presents this indentation that seems to suggest the propagation, an interaction of the shock front with the dense knot. And by looking at the radio data, these are different velocities, these are H1 observations. If we look at the same velocity as the northwestern cloud, which is interacting, we see that there is a clump here, a very dense material which fits the indentation. Here I show you a close-up view with X-rays, and these are DNH contours derived by from the radio data. So to confirm this interaction, we performed a spatially resolved spectral analysis on the synchrotron emission in this limb, and what we found is that we have variations of the cutoff energy of the synchrotron radiation with a clear minimum in this region here, which corresponds to the interaction region, which confirms that in this region the shock is decelerated. This is because in Sentinel-6 the maximum energy of the electrons is limited by the synchrotron losses. So we are in the loss-limited scenario, and in this scenario we know that the cutoff frequency of the synchrotron emission depends only on the shock velocity and not on the magnetic field. So a local minimum in the cutoff implies a minimum in the shock velocity, so a propagation in a dense environment. The problem is that if we derive the density contrast expected for this dip here by using this formula, we obtain that the cloud is only a factor of 2 or even less denser than the ambient medium, while the radio data suggests a much higher density contrast. So what is the density of the cloud? This is a crucial question, because here we are in a unique region where we combine both efficient particle acceleration and dense ambient medium. So to estimate the expected hadronic emission, we need to know exactly what is the density of the cloud. So to solve this issue, we performed a set of simulations. These are 3D simulations performed with the Flash code. Here I show you a movie where you can see the evolution of the forward shock. The solid surface represents the ejecta, and we place, these are the magnetic field lines, and we place a cloud in the ambient medium, and we explore different configurations for the cloud by changing its density, its mass, its size, and its distance from the explosion center. So here I show you just a subset of the simulations we have done. These are the most promising. Okay, thank you. And in order to discriminate between these different configurations, we synthesized the emission from each run. This is something we can do by using the REMLIGHT tool, which is a code that we developed that synthesizes the synchrotron radiation in the loss limited scenario. And here I show you a comparison. Here you see this is the maximum Newton image between 2 and 4 keV. And these are synthetic maps. These are monochromatic synchrotron maps at 3 keV for these two models. These are the two runs that can reproduce the observed indentation in terms of azimuthal and radial depth. Other runs do not fit the observations. So we will focus on these two runs where we have, in this case, we have a uniform cloud, while in this case, we have a cloud with an inward increasing density profile, with a Gaussian density profile. In this case, the cloud is slightly larger. So we can do a more quantitative analysis by repeating on the simulations the same analysis we did for the data. So we selected these regions, and in each of these regions we computed the cutoff of the synchrotron radiation. So we can compare the observed azimuthal profile of the cutoff frequency with that derived by the model. In black you see the data points, red and green curves show the results of the model. As you can see, both these models fit well the data points. There is probably the green model that is slightly better, but they are both okay. The same does not happen for other models. This is just an example to show you that other case do not reproduce the profile. Please notice that we have two models where the density of the shocked cloud is different by a factor of 2, and that produce almost the same variations in the cutoff frequency. This is because the observed cutoff frequency depends on the transmitted shock, but also on the lateral shocks that engulf the cloud that emit synchrotron radiation, which in projection lies in this region. So it is difficult to discriminate between these two models with this scenario, even though we can constrain the cloud density in this range. But we can do even better. We can discard one of these models because these two models predict different proper motion of the interaction region. So we compare the proper motion derived by this model with that observed, and to do this we exploit the Chandra large program observations. This is a set of regions that we use to calculate the proper motion. As you can see, in this region here, which is this one, that corresponds to the center of the interaction region, we have a lower proper motion than elsewhere. This confirms that there is a shock propagating in a dense environment. So what we did with the simulations is exactly the same kind of analysis. We produced two files at two different evolutionary stages with a time base of 40 years. This Chandra data have been obtained with a time base of 10 years, but our resolution is slightly lower than that of Chandra, so we use a longer time base, and then we repeated exactly the same analysis for the models, and this is what we get. Again, black point are data, and red and green are the values for the two models. As you can see, this model, the red one, predicts that the indentation is much slower than observed, so it can be discarded, while this model perfectly reproduces the observed profile. So this run reproduces the X-ray emission in terms of morphology, of azimuthal variation of the synchrotron radiation, and proper motion. So this is our best fit model, and we can use this to constrain the cloud parameters. So this allows us to synthesize the expected gamma ray emission. And what we do is that we consider both the leptonic and hadronic emission. As for the hadronic emission, we consider two populations of protons. those accelerated at the main shock front and those accelerated at the transmitted shock front, which are those that interact with the dense material. By letting, they have the same power law energy distribution, but they have different, they can have different cutoff, energy cutoff. So since we know exactly the density of each cell, in each cell we can compute the pi zero production and the subsequent gamma ray emission. So the only free parameter in this case are the cutoff frequency of the two populations and the total energy that we put in the hadrons. So what we get is something like this. These are the Hess data points for the southwestern limb only. These are the Fermi upper limits. And this is the synthetic spectrum that we obtain if we assume that the total energy of hadrons is 5 times 10 to the 49 Hz. This is an interesting number because, I mean, considering that we are looking only at one limb, this would correspond to a total energy of the hadrons of 10 to the 50 Hz, that is the classical 10% of the kinetic energy that is considered necessary to explain the observed energy density of cosmic rays. But in this case, as you can see, we have this bump here due to the hadrons interacting with the cloud, which would produce an emission in the 330 GV band, which would be well above the current Fermi upper limit. So we have to discard this, this model here. This is too much energy. If we reduce it to 2.5, we obtain something that can still fit the S data point that is in agreement with the Fermi upper limits. If this is the energy of the hadrons, we expect that SN 6, at least the southwestern limb, should be detected soon with Fermi. We know that there is a claim of detection, but it still needs to be confirmed. If this is not the case, this means that the energy of hadrons is even lower. This is what we obtain for an even lower values. So let me go to the conclusion. Oh, just one more slide. This is just to show you that we can also infer the spatial properties of the emission at different energies. This is the total gamma ray emission at 3 GV in blue, where we see that the emission is dominated by the inverse Compton, and we have a diffuse emission covering almost the whole limb. The white contours show the X-ray contours. While if we look at lower energies, we see the hadronic contribution that is localized where the cloud is. And in principle, this should be observable with the next generation of Cherenkov telescope with CTA. Okay, so let me come to my conclusion. So we have exploited both the XMM Newton and the Chandrasekhar program of observation of Theron 6 combined with radio observations, and we used all these data analysis to constrain the parameters of our model that allowed us to describe in detail the interaction region between Theron 6 and the cloud. This allowed to obtain an accurate description of the cloud that explains all the observed features, the proper motion, the variations of the synchrotron properties, the morphology, and that can also make prediction on the observed gamma ray emission, which depends only on the total energy of the protons accelerated therein. So we found that the current upper limit for the energy of hadrons accelerated in the southwestern limb is 2.5. Okay. It's 2.5 times 10 to the 49 X. Thank you.
Thank you, Marco. Questions? One hand shot up over here.
Hi, Marco. Very good work, but a question I have is if the...
Who's talking?
That's me. Huh? Yeah. If the remnant is starting to have its shock front distorted by moving into this, interacting with this cloud, then clearly it's hitting denser material, so wouldn't you expect there to be a huge turn-on on thermal X-ray emission and even H-alpha emission?
Well, for the thermal X-ray emission, we have looked at carefully at the spectra. With these values of density, the thermal emission would be still below the synchrotron radiation. This is because the synchrotron radiation is low there, but not that low. I mean, it's still above the thermal emission. As for the H-alpha, this is a very good point. We have looked at the images, but we don't see any clear. In that region, the H-alpha maps are very noisy. So this can be a problem of orientation. I mean, maybe we don't see the interaction just adjacent. Maybe there is some problem there, or maybe the medium is completely ionized. But we don't see anything in this region. By the way, we also have planned sea observation to find other indications of interaction there.
So, since you are assuming a leptonic model, to constrain that fraction of energy that goes into protons, you must assume also a kappa IP, right?
Yes. Essentially, the electron energy, the total electron energy is something like 10 to the 47 X. So, what we do is essentially that we impose that the S data points are explained by the leptonic emission. So the normalization of the leptonic emission is dictated by the S data point. And then we let just the hadronic energy vary.
Yeah, but you keep the ratio fixed, no?
Sorry?
But you keep the ratio between leptons and protons fixed, right? Because otherwise I don't see
the ratio, you can get
a constraint on that. The ratio between electrons and protons, accelerated electrons and protons, is fixed.
Yes. Well, no, it's not fixed because you mean the number of.
Actually, the number is the same.
No, it's not fixed. We just, and as you see, the leptonic almost the same is this red one here. But I mean, the ratio between the energies is of the order of 100.
Yeah.
Okay.
Other questions? If not, we'll thank Marco again.